I have just about 3 minutes after the hour. So hello, everybody. I'm Marty Rosendale, CEO of the Maryland Technology Council. And this is the live Capital M Zoomcast. The Capital M podcast was created originally to further the regional conversation around capital markets, define issues, identify solutions, and build consensus to drive change. Our focus these days is on the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the regional response. The Maryland Tech Council, as most of you know, is the industry trade association representing the technology and life sciences industries throughout Maryland. And before we get started today, I have just a couple of housekeeping items that I want to bring up. First of all, we will be taking questions today through both the chat function as well as the Q&A. I will be monitoring both as the conversation goes on, so we'll be able to incorporate questions into the conversation live. But please look at the bottom of your screen, you'll see the chat feature and the Q&A feature, and that is how we will be monitoring and taking questions today. So thank you all for joining us. This will be recorded. My guest today is the Maryland State Comptroller, Peter Francho. Peter Francho has been our comptroller since 2007, and he's a strong advocate for small business in Maryland. As comptroller, he is the chief fiscal officer for the state of Maryland. Comptroller, welcome.
Thank you, Marty.
So, Mr. Comptroller, would you just take a minute and tell us about yourself, what it means to be comptroller of a state like Maryland, and why are you so passionate about Maryland?
Well, I'm 72 years old, but I feel like I'm 52, like everyone else. And, I'm honored and delighted to, for 14 years, have been a statewide elected official. You correctly described the elected office as being the CFO of the state, and there are numerous aspects to that. I'm not the CEO like you are of the Tech Council, that's the governor. But I serve on the Board of Public Works, which meets every 2 weeks. We vote on average on $450 million in state contracts at every meeting. It's the treasurer, the governor, and I. We're all independently elected or appointed, and you need two votes to do anything. It's a rare opportunity for transparency and accountability in government contracts. And I urge all your listeners to at least pay attention to the programs. Once again, I emphasize it happens every 2 weeks like clockwork. Tom Brennan from my staff has posted his information, and more than happy to share the agenda if folks have an interest in state procurement. Secondly, I always give my apologies to the private sector. We have a genius of a system in America called capitalism and free enterprise. It's not without its flaws, part of which is the inequity right now of some of the economic consequences of COVID. And we can talk about that. But fundamentally, we have a system of prosperity and democracy that's never been equaled anywhere. And sadly, we dropped the ball on the COVID issue at the federal level. We did not do what other developed countries did and get more or less control over the virus. The virus is now officially out of control in the United States. And that's a shame. In Maryland, we've been better than most states because Governor Hogan, who's a Republican, I'm a Democrat. We have a very positive relationship where he's emphasizing correctly, in my opinion, the safety and health of its citizens. That leads directly to the safety and health of our economy, because if we can't corral the virus, we're never going to be able to talk our citizens into engaging in normal economic activity. They're not dumb, and they're not going to do it. So that's, I guess, we come to the result. The one thing that Congress did that was helpful was the $2.2 trillion first stimulus. And just quickly, $2.2 trillion bills put end to end would reach from Earth to the sun, all the way around the sun, and all the way back to Earth. It's a god-awful amount, big amount of money. I'm tight with a dollar, and I was kind of skeptical of that large infusion by the Congress, which is now over. But it's proven to be enormously successful. 70% of Maryland small businesses took advantage of the Paycheck Protection Program alone, along with the unemployment increase and the personal checks. We need desperately another one. If we don't get another one, and I'm knock on wood, relatively optimistic we will, we're going to be facing a long, cold, hard winter in Maryland. Not so much for you guys, because we have a K-shaped recovery going on where the tech companies tend to be hanging in there and doing okay. But for the bottom half of the economy, for the 1.1 million Marylanders who have filed for first-time unemployment over the last 5 months, we're facing a real catastrophe without a second stimulus. And it has to happen sooner rather than later. And then secondly, if there's this, a resurgence of the virus, which appears inevitable at this point because of the way we dropped the ball on everything at the federal level, that's going to have a devastating impact. Long-winded way of saying for 12 to 18 months, we are going to be up the creek without a paddle. If either of those things, one doesn't happen and one does happen, if it's a perfect world and we have a vaccine and we have the situation resolved as far as the stimulus, then we still will have billion-dollar reductions in the state budget, which will trickle down to Montgomery County and the county budgets and also down to the municipal budgets. That I think we can handle because we're a wealthy state, but trust me, we are not through the stormy weather right now. I'm going to stop there, I think, before I depress myself officially. Take any questions from Marty or take any questions from you guys. But I want to emphasize that after 18 months, that's a reasonable outlook where we can get out of the foxhole and begin to get back to being normal. We're going to see an enormous prosperity in the state of Maryland. We're very wealthy. We're very affluent. The public budgets will be threatened, but we have all the liquidity and reserves that we need to get through that. It's the private sector, small business budgets on Main Street, not you guys necessarily, because you're into technology and cybersecurity, but the other small businesses. We've lost tens of thousands of them already. They're never gonna reopen. We're gonna lose tens of thousands more if we don't do some kind of relief plan immediately to either complement the federal second stimulus or substitute in a very small way for it. So Marty, I don't mean to get in down in the weeds too much. I'm happy to talk about the future, which I think will be very optimistic, but and where we are almost going to be completely dependent upon your sector.
So thank you for that. I really appreciate the introduction. So, Mr. Comptroller, we have a number of companies, even in the tech and life sciences sector, that are struggling somewhat. I was talking with Thomas Brennan earlier today, and Thomas, if you could put your contact information or the contact information for the office in the chat for everyone, that would be great. About our business continuity task force, which is a group of executive mentors that have come together to help companies navigate this pandemic recession. And we're finding that even in our sectors that tend to be resilient as compared to hospitality and restaurants and such, we're about 20% are struggling for one reason or another. Either they're struggling with how exactly to get back to the office, or they've got pipeline issues because their salespeople can't make sales calls and whatnot. So I'm curious, and maybe you could just take a minute. You know, I love the fact that you see us coming out of this and the state is strong, but maybe talk a little bit more about that recovery, what it might look like going forward.
Well, for the next 18 months, the word recovery really means survival. So for the 20% of your sector that are struggling, survival is the message. And you survive through communication, transparency, et cetera. We've declared tax holidays. We've declared temporary halt to compliance and enforcement as far as the tax taxing of the state. We're not interested in adding burdens to people, but if you don't communicate with us, we're going to come after you like a ton of bricks eventually. So you got to communicate if you have financial difficulties concerning the public side. As far as the private side, I continue the same recommendations, which is, you know, call your landlords, call your banks, call your utility companies, call others and ask for forbearance at a minimum and steep reductions if you are facing not a you know, a situation where you're having a lot of financial stress on your company. Having said that, I think you put your finger on it when you said you're not the hotel industry. Imagine if you were. I mean, nobody. Nobody's going to a hotel. It's like a ghost economy for them. And it's going to get worse, I think, because of the second wave, which will further scare people away from doing normal travel and normal hospitality industry. Restaurants, we've already lost 40% of our restaurants in Maryland. They'll never reopen again. Stunning. I mean, this is a sector that has over 400,000 employees, many of them at the bottom of the wage category. They have nothing now. They have no stimulus. They have no unemployment. They have no grants. They have nothing other than this message coming out of the U.S. Senate, which is, gee, we're not really interested in doing anything. I mean, that is just the most inconceivable political response I've ever seen to anything. And just put yourself in the shoes of the 1 million Marylanders that have no employment, no income, no revenue, nothing. And they have no self-confidence. So how do they, you know, you guys at least have access to, you know, some means of negotiation, I guess I would say. And I urge you all to take a very big account of it. As far as the recovery, it'll be at least 4 or 5 years before we even get back to where we were. It's not going to be even by any means because the COVID pandemic has made it glaringly obvious. There are hundreds of thousands of people in Maryland that are totally disconnected from the internet. And the digital divide is just, I mean, shocking. And it's, you guys, I think, are fairly well, I say you guys, I don't mean to be casual or glib about it. I'm not suggesting you don't have big burdens and big worries that keep you up at night, but I am suggesting that tech right now is in a fairly sweet spot because of the amount of federal, state support and revenues and the amount of importance that people are placing on working remotely and doing everything remotely. Why are you guys going to be so important to the state of Maryland? You are going to be central. This tech council under Marty's leadership and others who are on the board, congratulations, you are going to be front and center because we're going to reinvent the state of Maryland. It's going to become a state that is business friendly in the sense that at the state level, we don't have all sorts of obnoxious add-on money grab taxes for well-intentioned purposes, but not very good results. We're not going to go back to that era, number one. Number two, at the local level, Montgomery County and elsewhere, we're going to get rid of this thicket of inspections and permits and money grabs also, where every time you guys turn around and try to do something to help the state's economy, we stick our hand in your pocket and demand that, literally extort you through local regulations to pay money to the county and to the municipalities. That's going to stop. We're not going to have that reputation anymore. And that, I think, is the silver lining to this economic catastrophe that we're facing, that once we begin to come out of it, we can change our state's perception. And I think technology is going to lead us to a reinvention of healthcare, transit, education. K through 12 education is not even going to be comparable to what we have now. It's going to be reinvented. Public safety also, because you know, we have to deal and make sure that our citizens feel safe. So we're going to have a chance to reinvent ourselves through technology, through artificial intelligence, through data analysis, through innovative, typical for the private sector, innovative partnerships where we incentivize you to show that certain remedies and adjustments in how we do our business in the state will A, be affordable, and B, get really good results. And I'm happy to go into examples of that, but I don't want to bore all you guys. I'm just saying after 18 months, when the dust is beginning to settle from COVID-19, and people have some reasonable belief that they can get out and engage in economic activity safely, my experts tell me there is a god-awful big amount of money that people have put in their checking accounts and is sitting there. A, they've been paid, many of them for not working, but they haven't been able to spend it on anything because they can't travel, they can't see their grandkids, they can't go see their parents wherever they are. You know, everybody's just sitting on a mountain of cash as far as, you know, a sector of Maryland consumers. So once we get stable, then I think we're going to see a pretty rapid return to prosperity. Thank you. I think you're on
mute. Microphone on mute there for a minute because
sure.
It was an ambulance.
That's like been there, done that, Marty.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So I noticed that Thomas has put contact information in the chat room for anybody that wants to know how to contact the comptroller and his office. So at the risk of getting us a little bit off track, Mr. Comptroller, you mentioned the technological divide. And one of the things that the pandemic has pointed out or made more apparent is the technological divide, the social divide, the economic divide that we see in many places across the country. And when the conversation around this began to escalate, I started looking and asking the question, what is an industry association's role in helping resolve this problem? Because I wasn't sure. And in talking with our board members, our members, we have put together a working group. And the working group is focused on how can we apply technology to help resolve these issues? Because technology has been a part of the problem. For example, the cashless economy. So this pandemic, I don't know about you, but it's been a long time since I've reached into my wallet, taken out a dollar bill to buy something. And so it's pushed us faster into this cashless economy. Well, if you don't have access to technology or you're not bankable, you're going to be excluded from the economy. And so we're looking at ways to apply technology to prevent that from happening. What are your thoughts around this, around inclusion, equitable distribution of technology, and those kinds of issues?
Well, we have generally addressed the digital divide in a piecemeal fashion in Maryland. A little bit here, a little bit there, something for the rural areas, something for the inner city areas, but it's all kind of a patch quilt. What I'm suggesting is that the state's leaders need to come together and come up with a comprehensive Marshall Plan for the state to make us once and for all one of the leading states, if not the leading state in the country, as far as universal access to high-speed internet and technology. And that's going to require all sorts of new leadership. It's going to require a lot of people's favorite China to be broken on the ground, because we're going to do something that is comprehensive. It's all the state, it's all the counties, it's all the municipalities. It is all the private sector that's involved. Nobody's going to be left out. And we're going to invest, you know, we have a $44 billion budget this year. We're going to invest a significant chunk of money. Now, I say that boldly because I'm running for governor and I'm going to be the next governor, I believe. And that is going to be one of my top priorities, that we turn Maryland into a go-to state for anybody that has an interest in technology or the life sciences. And we're gonna roll out the red carpet also for the companies that are here and the workers that are here in that sector. We're going to roll out incentives for keeping you here. But you're a lot smarter than I am, but I am a big devotee of technology because I think technology can lead us to much more affordable, efficient delivery systems for healthcare and transportation and education, et cetera. I don't really want to get into all the details because, you know, these are complicated issues, but I'll tell you what does catch my eye from time to time. I know England just announced multi awards that they're going to give in the £1 million or plus category for anybody who comes up with an interesting, testable, actual suggestion, either oral or physical, to improve one of the sectors in Britain. And I'm a big fan of offering people money, reasonable amounts, for innovation and nimbleness and entrepreneurship. And, you know, I'm, for example, let's just pick one sector, the environmental sector, which has been horribly abused at the federal level. It is not under Governor Hogan's leadership and others. You know, I'm very, very big supporter of protecting Mother Earth for future generations. Well, we have one of the world's greatest estuaries in Chesapeake Bay. What's the problem with the bay? It's a lot of nitrogen from agriculture and frankly, urban sprawl that runs into the Chesapeake Bay, produces a lot of algae. The algae are on the surface and then they die and they go to the bottom and they decompose while they're being decomposed by bacteria. And trust me, I'm not a scientist. They use up all the oxygen. So we have these huge dead zones in the bay, which are basically oxygen-free, and the fish and the oysters and nothing can survive in them. Well, what about an award for $1 million to someone who comes up with a technological solution that is affordable and practical? I mean, it's not too hard to conceive of, gee, right at the surface, we have a lot of oxygen, and down at the bottom, we need oxygen. Maybe there's something that I would never be able to think of in 100 years that someone could suggest and win a prize, and we could actually, after testing it, scale it up and have significant improvement of the environment of the Chesapeake Bay. What would that substitute for? Right now, we spend about $500 million of taxpayers' money annually on the bay, and we don't make any progress. We pick up some debris from the bay, and that's about it. Just for example, and think about the K-12 education system, how inadequate that is for producing folks that are intellectually alive and basically trained in essential knowledge about how the economy works. I mean, think if we were producing kids that actually could come into the workforce without having to go to 4 years of college. I'm not suggesting that's for everybody's case. There are a lot of kids that want to go to college, okay, or want to go to graduate school. That's fine too. But there are also a lot of people out there that don't need to go to college. And they could work in the life sciences or in the tech sector in different capacities. Well, how do you reinvent the K-12 system? The pandemic is forcing us to do that. The question is, do we go back to the same old, Marty, and like we were before, or do we step boldly into the future using the Tech Council and your associations as champions of improving the state of Maryland and making us, once again, a go-to state for young people to A, stay here if they're here already, and B, come here from other states because they hear that, like, gosh, Maryland has really got something going there. And guess what? Their governor insists that he's going to hand out a six-pack of cold Maryland craft beer to any millennial who visits Maryland. That's a joke because I'm the chief alcohol regulator, and I happen to be a big champion of Maryland craft beer, which is very popular among millennials. They don't like Budweiser. They don't like Miller Lite. They want, you know, Dogfish or Flying Dog or something else. That's why I'm optimistic about the future. I can't guarantee it because, as you know, all politics are, you know, there's nothing for certain. But I have served for 16 years as comptroller. I've done something which nobody ever was able to do with the comptroller's office. I've made it an exciting job. I'm not term limited. I'm going to give it up voluntarily and run for governor. But there'll probably be 20 people running for comptroller because it's a very cool job. And we have a tremendous workforce that does tax collection. What amazes me, and I'll finish with this, I'm the tax collector, but I also get more votes than any other statewide candidate in the history of the state. So I think that comes about because of customer service.
It certainly says a lot. Absolutely.
Well, so, whatever. Okay, I didn't mean to go off on a filibuster. I'm happy to interact with your folks.
The fact that you get the most votes, I was referring to. That says a lot about who you are, I think. So I want to come back to the recovery, and our industries, life sciences and technology, they've been a part of the response to COVID-19. On the life sciences side, we have companies developing vaccines, diagnostics, therapeutics. On the tech side, a group of our companies got together and created a digital wizard that helped people navigate the stimulus. So our industries are looking for ways to help, to help the state recover. How would you advise industry leaders? What should they be doing now to help you, to help legislators? What should we be doing to help facilitate the recovery?
Immediately, you need to stop the bleeding among small businesses. These are not your members, but they need your help. We have about 170,000 of them in Maryland, and they're dying right now. They're hanging on by a thread or by their fingernails. They're fabulous members of the hospitality sector, but it's frankly every main street in the state is turning into a ghost street. And we need to get assistance out immediately. I've suggested to the governor, who I once again have a respectful relationship with, that he spend $585.8 million that was a positive fund balance on June 30th of this year. It's not a surplus. It's not a something due to economic activity. It's not even due to economic management. It's just because so much money came in with the first stimulus, we automatically withheld income tax. And so our predicted drop in income tax withholdings did not occur. So this money is unallocated. It's sitting in a bank account somewhere in Baltimore, gathering dust and mold. And I would suggest that your council, who have a lot of influential people, to the extent you have communications with Governor Hogan, and I would emphasize with him, much as I love his staff, I think this is a decision that he and he alone can make, should take this money immediately and distribute it to Main Street mom and pop retail stores and try to save some of them. At a minimum, it sends out the message that we care. It's certainly not a panacea. If there's a second stimulus, that will be very helpful. But I think immediately what you should be advocating is some version of state relief to complement what the Fed successfully did and hopefully will do again with their second stimulus. And I can't think of anything that would be more important than writing out a $10,000 check or a $20,000 check to one of these businesses. You guys know who they are. I guarantee you the economic development people in the counties know who they are in the municipalities. And they're not going to be around if we wait until December. They're gone, right. Finished. I mean, I'm not talking brand new businesses. I'm talking about businesses that have been there for 40 or 50 years. Family owned, shut, closed, never going to reopen. Just so out of a sense of self-preservation of the state's small business community, I would suggest immediately you contact the governor and do something as a tech council, not even for your own membership, because your own membership, frankly, is viewed as, yes, having some burdens, but nothing like these guys are facing. And I'm not just talking about restaurants and bars and taverns. I'm talking about everything on Main Street. So that would be the immediate thing. Short term, midterm, I think you have to analyze what's going on with the virus and what's going on with the second stimulus. And most importantly, what's going on with the national elections. I don't want to get political. I know everybody gets sensitive, but if Donald Trump is reelected, that's going to be one set of analysis. And if Joe Biden is elected, he's my candidate, I'm a Democrat, we're going to see a completely different environment politically. So I would wait until the election based on that. If hopefully my side prevails, I think the sky's the limit for your association, Marty, to take a leadership role in leading the state out of this dark period we're in and into something that is truly unpredictable and extraordinary. Because, I mean, when you say you have folks that are in cybersecurity and artificial intelligence, hey, get me some of that artificial intelligence. We use it all the time in our agency. I mean, we used to put aside 100 returns for suspected fraudulent refund requests, and 90 of them would prove to be legitimate, that we're just pulling aside and delaying for a good reason, but ultimately they proved to be perfectly correct. Now we put aside 100, because we have algorithms and all sorts of artificial intelligence. We pull out 100 returns that we think are fraudulent, and 90 of them are. I mean, just imagine how much improved our fraud detection section is because of technology. And that's all happened during my tenure. In 10 years, we've gone from 0 to 90 degrees very comfortably, and the state has benefited. That's just a small example of what you guys hold out for us as a robust economic recovery. Thank you.
Well, so thank you. So, Mr. Comptroller, before we get into questions, is there anything that we haven't covered today that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I'd just like to compliment everybody out there who is a rational, functioning adult. Obviously, the virus is, we have to corral it. And to the extent you can urge everybody to keep, don't let their guard down, and don't be led into casual gathering with friends or family. I mean, I know it's terrible, but we need to protect other people. And I hope everybody understands that what Governor Hogan initially did was very commendable, and I salute his team. Recently, I think we've gotten way too lax, and we've gotten into this political thing of, oh, gee, the economic damage is so awful, we have to like balance it and have less public health attention. No, we need more public health attention in order to get the economy into a situation where people are going to feel safe. And I'll leave you with this one point. Who out there rides Metro and mass transit right now comfortably? Thank you. That kind of answers the question for me. And we just, you know, there are lots of people that are saying, oh, I want to listen to the president. I want to go out and hug and embrace and kiss people and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, it's a weird, crazy environment we're in right now. And you guys are the rational folks that we are looking to as far as the recovery. But I think also we're looking to each of you, please don't jump into this pool of treating the virus like it's some kind of hoax. Thank you. That's just a personal comment from me.
And I agree with your comment. My training in microbiology supports that comment. So just to remind everybody, there is a Q&A feature and a chat feature at the bottom of your screen. Please use them to answer questions. Mr. Comptroller, we do have a question. It's a bit long, so I'm going to paraphrase a bit. But the question has to do with the fact that small businesses, minority-owned businesses have been hit particularly hard. And so the question is, you know, what does the Board of Public Works intend to do to continue to hold Maryland agencies accountable for including SBR and MBE set-aside goals in new procurements?
Well, we already do that. And I've been on the Board of Public Works. This is my 14th year, and it's one of our major issues. This is not a mandate, but it's a goal. It's an aspirational goal that 20% or whatever the figure is of state contracts go to women and minority-owned businesses. I am constantly commenting that this is done not to benefit those small businesses. It's meant to benefit the state's economy because it will produce fresh talent and energy. And I go back to the example of the pension board that I'm the vice chairman of, That's a $55 billion fund that the state has for its public employees and teachers' retirement systems. And the return is very important, obviously, as far as funding our folks' retirement systems. But when I first was elected, of the 52 money managers, they were all white males who looked exactly like me. And I insisted that they change that they bring in women money managers and minority money managers. They had to do it covertly because everybody's so obsessed with fiduciary responsibility and this, that, and the other thing. And they had about 15 different reasons why we couldn't do anything. So we set up a Terra Maria program. We currently have, I think, $3 or $4 billion of the pension fund invested with minority money managers and women money managers. And I love to point out that they're knocking the socks off the incumbent managers, performance-wise. From a fiduciary standpoint, it was a great decision, but we had to name it the Terra Maria program because, you know, we have to have it in Latin because we don't want to alarm the financial community that we're doing something that's good for our people and good overall by advocating for MBEs and women-owned businesses. So in answer to the procurement issue at the state level, it's not a mandate, it's an aspirational goal. It's generally met, you know, billions of dollars each year are allocated to these entities. But I often argue that the public policy is not necessarily benefiting them. Obviously it does, but it benefits the whole state's economy because we bring fresh talent and energy into our mainstream economic activities. So your listener is correct that the COVID-19 has had a huge impact on minority and women-owned and particularly Hispanic businesses. And that's just a tragedy. Instead of, you know, 8% of white male-owned businesses, it's 30% of African-American-owned businesses belly up.
Sure. All right. So, Mr. Comptroller, looks like we don't have any more questions at this time. I just want to remind everybody that Tom Brennan has put contact information into the chat room. So if you think of any questions or comments that you'd like to make, you know, please use that contact information that's been provided. Again, this is Marty Rosendale. You've been watching the live Capital M Zoomcast. Our guest today has been the Maryland State Comptroller, Peter Francho. Mr. Comptroller, thank you so much for your time, your attention, and everything that you do. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, honor, and privilege to be the Comptroller, and it's very nice to swing by. And my regards to everybody, particularly you, Marty, because you know that your sector represents the genius of our system. Once again, as people allude to, there are big problems with inequities and discrimination and digital divide and things like that. But the beauty of our system is that it's better than anything else we have anywhere else in the world. This is the system relatively of laws and stability and predictability and prosperity. So it's attributable to your members. It's not us on the public side. It's you guys on the private side that, you know, stick your necks out and produce great results. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you everybody for tuning in.